the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, we welcome you back. It is time for more. It's another hour, the best of money information. Another hour of the Bucket Strategy Investing Program, standing by for you and giving you what we believe is the best in money strategies, money information. Answers are just ahead. You just need to provide the questions for us. Professor Rick Plum here with me, Johnny Dean, once again from Lucia Capital Group. He's playing the part of our main brain trust advisor. I think it suits him quite well. More topics to cover this hour, emails and phone calls. I did want to get into, if we can, and I think we'll just start off with it one more time, following up yesterday's discussion, which had to do with IRAs and Roths and 401ks and all that. We had some questions from people on how you can avoid the penalty. What constitutes a, I don't know what it is, legal or...
An exception to the penalty rule.
An exception to the penalty, correct, yeah. Ways you can take money out of your IRA. Besides the 72T that we were talking about in the previous hour. But there are exceptions, and we'll run down some of those just to sort of remind you what they are, because we did have some questions on this after the program yesterday. So that and estate planning stuff and whatever else is on your mind, you got a money question of any kind, you can take part in the forum. You should call us right now. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. If you want to add to this big stack of emails that we'll be reading on the show, you go over to wealthed.com, you click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Professor Rick Plum here with me, a certified financial planner, and he returns this hour courtesy of the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group. We thank them for sponsoring this hour of the show. As always, we do try on this program to deliver to you the strategies that are right for you, right? Of course. Money strategies that could help you to get through retirement. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air about anything that you hear or see on this program, you can always call Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust we call them. Their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Your situation, of course, is unique to you. So you need to find out if your individual retirement goals and needs are being met. You're not just getting a plan that everybody else is using. With access to a network of brain trust advisors across the country, it's a pretty good bet that Lucia Capital Group can help you out. Again, off the air, 800-644-1150. On the air, we got all the lines open right now, so you got a money question, you give us a call, we'll talk to you about it. 877-PLANNER, our number, 877-752-6637. Emails over at wealthed.com. So, Professor Plum, IRA distributions, you know, as we kind of said all throughout last hour, age 59 and a half is your magical age for whatever reason of being able to take money out of your retirement plan, your IRA, your 401ks, et cetera.
Annuities,
yeah. Any one of those retirement plans without penalty. If you do so the day before you turn 59 and a half, there is an actual penalty for doing so.
Yes.
Now, code section 72T, we covered enough of that last hour, but that is one way to get some money, access some money. It has to be done correctly and should be done in conjunction with your financial advisor. But there are some other ways to avoid the penalty. I wanted to bring this up again, if we can.
Well, there's several ways to avoid the penalty. The three biggest ways to avoid the penalty are obviously 59 and a half. You get old enough to get into your retirement accounts. Unfortunately, you pass away. Now the account becomes a beneficiary. The beneficiaries can get to the money without a 10% penalty at any age because the owner of the account passed away.
Okay, focus on that for just a second if you would, because you may have, say, a husband who passes away and passes on to his wife or vice versa. So you have a spousal situation, but you also have a kid situation.
Uh-huh.
Now, with the spousal situation, if one of them is over age 59 and a half and the spouse who inherits it is under the age of 59 and a half,
well, whether the person who died was over 59 and a half or not over 59 and a half, if we leave it in that individual's name, now we're talking about a spousal beneficiary, and unfortunately it happens where younger people pass away, and maybe they're in their 30s or 40s, and the surviving spouse might need to access some of the money that's in their late husband, late wife's 401k, IRA, or whatever it is. They can, if they leave it in the owner's name, even though the person's passed away, they can leave it in their name, and they can take distributions directly from that account, and it's not penalized. It's still taxable, because it's always going to be taxable, but it's not subject to a penalty because the owner of the account died. Now, one of the options a surviving spouse has is to roll it into their own name and basically to become the owner of the account. So the husband dies, the surviving spouse rolls her name, she's under 59 and a half. It's as if it was hers from day one. She is the owner of the account. Now we're not, we don't have that exception to the rule anymore, because the owner of the account, the surviving spouse in this case now, is still alive and they're under 59 and a half. So if we left it in the original owner's name, then the 59 and a half rule goes away because the owner is dead. If we roll it over to the surviving spouse, it becomes the new owner. A beneficiary IRA, where a non-spouse inherits it, they're still the owner and a beneficiary. With a spousal situation, they actually become the new owner. And so they look at that owner as, is the owner still alive? Is the owner under 59 and a half? Is the owner disabled? None of those apply. Well, then we've got to go to some of the secondary ones that are a lot smaller, because otherwise there's a 10% penalty. And so when we have an unfortunate death at an early age, we have to be careful how we go about setting up the accounts for the surviving spouse to make sure that if they need access to it, that they can still have access to it, that they don't have to worry about the 10% penalty by rolling it into their own name. That's just one of the things to think about when you're doing unfortunate planning.
Yeah, it's titling in this particular instance. I would suggest that if the person who is, say the spouse who is inheriting this IRA, needs to get money out of that IRA or whatever the asset is that they inherited, and they're under age 59 and a half, that you make sure that it remains in the deceased person's name.
Right, we've seen this unfortunately where there was, in one case I remember years back, there was a fairly large difference in age. And so the person who passed away was in their late 50s. And they had built up a very nice IRA account. And because they had a nice IRA account, they didn't have as much life insurance as they may otherwise have had, because they had a nice net worth. It was mostly in the IRA. When they passed away, the surviving spouse went to the local brokerage or local credit union or whatever, and they said, okay, your husband died. Let's roll it over to your IRA, because that's what you do. Now, she was only in her late 30s. There was about a 20-year age difference between them. So she's 20 years old, or 20 years younger, 38 years old, 39 years old, and the majority of all the money she has to live off of is in her, now it's her, IRA. And she can't touch it until 59 and a half unless she does a very long-term structured substantial equal payment plan, a 20-plus year supplemental or SEPP. So it became difficult for her to do what she wanted to do. If they had left it in his name, she could have taken extra money out, helped raise the kids, done some other things, but the way that they did it, because they just didn't know. They rolled it over to her IRA.
That's why it's important to talk to your financial advisor before you do anything
talk
major.
Talk to a certified financial planner if possible.
Yes, somebody who understands how this stuff works. Because you don't want to make a simple mistake of saying, well, then I'll just put it into my name, and all of a sudden you can't access those funds that you may actually need to access until you're age 59 and a half. Okay, so death is one. Qualified higher education expenses. You can take money out of qualified plans for
IRAs.
For reasons of higher education.
For helping expenses. Pay for college expenses, basically. Your kids are going to school. You're trying to do a career change. You need money for the education expenses. Qualified higher education expenses do avoid the penalty. So if I have a $20,000 tuition payment this year, I can take $20,000 out of my IRA, and that will not be subject to a penalty. I don't even have to show that the money of the IRA was the exact same dollars I paid to the educational institution. I just have to have the educational expenses to cover the distribution. I mean, I could have made the payment early in the year and thinking that I was going to be okay for the year, but then run short on other things and say, well, I can pull out some money from my IRA to live off of, knowing that I've got this education expense to cover the penalty, not the tax, the penalty on that distribution from an IRA. So qualified higher education expenses can be taken from an IRA without a penalty, obviously still taxable.
Yeah, the whole idea of being qualified education expenses, I mean, that sounds
tuition
to me like...
Tuition and fees required to be in school, basically.
Yes, but as I understand, I don't have all the information here, but things like dorm rooms and things like that, food, I don't know that they necessarily count that as perhaps qualified education expenses.
Yeah, I think I've I'd have to look.
I've read that somewhere, and I believe that's the case. But you have things like necessary requirements for school that are directly related to the education of the individual: tuition, fees, books, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's let's see. Tuition, fees, books, supplies, and equipment required for the enrollment or attendance of a student at an eligible educational institution. They include needs, special needs services, things like that. Room and board are qualified higher education expenses.
Oh, they do count that?
They do.
Wow.
As long as a person is at least a half-time student. You can't be just taking one class.
So wait a minute. So if I'm renting an apartment somewhere near college, that's room and board.
Yeah, I mean, there are limits. This is just a basic one. When you get into the really tight numbers of it, you can't be, you know, you can't rent a $15,000 a month apartment and take it out of the IRA. It has to be basically what the school would have charged you for living on campus.
Okay, so there is a connection there. All right. There's more to come. 877-PLANNER. Give us a call. We got lines open right now. Whatever money issue is on your mind, 877-752-6637. Emails as well at wealthed.com. Johnny Dean from Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Helping you out with your money right here on the boxing program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Talking to you about your money issues, whatever you got on your mind, you give us a call. We're taking your calls, 877-PLANNER. Lines are open right now, 877-752-6637. We'd love to hear from you. Whatever money issue that you have, we'll help you out here on the program. And we'll also help you out off the program on a different scale. It's the Social Security Show. Happens every Tuesday, and it's only at wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. There are all kinds of reasons why you need to tune into this. Ask your Social Security questions. Get them answered. And really help understand a little bit how Social Security affects you. It's only at wealthed.com. That's where you go to see it. It's on Tuesdays, every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific time, 4 o'clock Eastern time. We are answering your questions. You can leave a recorded voicemail, too, and we will do some of those on our next program as well. So watch it at wealthed.com. And by the way, speaking of Social Security, we have I don't want to call it a white paper. That sounds weird.
No,
it's not. It's just
kind of a guide to the new changes.
Changing Social Security rules, how do they affect you in the coming weeks and months and all that stuff? There's a lot of confusion there. People aren't sure how it is because they're being scared by this and that. Professor Plum, he put together this free guide on all the big changes coming to Social Security. And the way you can view this is you go to our Facebook page. You can download your copy. You go to our Facebook page. It's if you want to search for it, it's facebook.com/thewealthed. But if you're on Facebook, just search us, Wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, Wealth Ed. And if you're not sure about that and you're at wealthed.com, there's a little Facebook icon in the upper part of the webpage. Click on that. That'll bring you right to our Facebook page, and you'll see it there. It's one of the first posts there at wealthed.com. So download it. Take a look at it. Find out if, and maybe it doesn't. You know, there are plenty of people, Professor Plum, who are not affected at all by these Social Security changes.
There's quite a few people that it doesn't affect them. And the other side of it is there's a lot of people that are affected and there's nothing they can do about it.
Nothing they can do about it, and it's going to be you and me.
They can change their plans, but they can't do anything about it.
Exactly. And I would suggest that anybody who's under the age of 62 right now, it probably affects you, but there's not a thing you can do. All right, so just see it at wealthed.com or our Facebook page. Okay, I want to take a couple of calls. We're going to get to some more of these IRA distributions, ways to avoid the penalties with IRA distributions. But we have some folks on hold, so we're going to take care of those. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. We still have a couple of lines open. Let's move along next to Tom in Las Vegas. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
Yeah, my question is, my wife was born in 1957, and I understand, I just heard on a commercial break that people born after 1957 now, the Social Security is going to do away with the spousal benefit, whereby if she worked till her full retirement age, she would get half of my benefit if I worked till my full retirement age. And I was wondering, I guess that's true from what you just mentioned a few minutes ago, so... that's basically what my question was.
Yeah.
Well, there's the spousal benefit is still available to somebody who has a very small benefit or no benefit of their own. And so, but it wasn't, you know, people born in 1957. It's anybody born in 1954 and later. So she she didn't just miss it by a little. She missed it by a little bit more than that. So now what's happening is anybody who was born in 1954 or later, when they ultimately do apply for a benefit, they are going to be applying for whatever they're eligible for. There's not going to be a choice. They're going to get the higher benefit that's available, whether it's their own or the spousal, that's it. And so you can't have an choosing to take only a spousal benefit at age 66, leaving your own benefit alone to grow until age somebody that was born in 1953 or earlier, when they get to full retirement age, does have the ability to choose a lower benefit on the spousal side if they want to, and leave their own alone to grow until 70. If they were born after 53, 1954 and later, they no longer have the choice. They will be taking the higher one.
It used to be available to everybody, Tom, and now they put a cutoff date, 1954 and later.
How old are you, Tom?
I'm 62.
Okay, and you turned 62 last year, not in January, February this year, right?
That's correct.
So depending, is yours the higher of the two benefits?
Yes, it is.
There may be a game you can still play, because you still can do the spousal application. If you wanted to leave yours alone to grow until age 70, what you could do is wait until your wife turns 62, you'll be 67 at that time, then she applies for her benefit at 62. And at 66, 67, whatever age you are when she turns 62, you apply for a spousal benefit from her work record. And you start receiving half of her full retirement age benefit. Not half of what she's receiving, because she's receiving a reduced benefit because she's taking it early. You would receive half retirement age benefit until age 70, when you then apply for your own fully delayed retirement credit enhanced benefit. Now, this only makes sense if you had planned on waiting until 70 anyway.
Well, just to retire at 67, and then if she worked till her, you know, full retirement age, she would get half of mine, which is the higher benefit.
But that's not going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to work anymore.
No, that's not going to work. Yeah. And if she's going to keep working until 67, my plan wasn't going to work either. Because if she keeps working, that means she won't get a benefit. If she doesn't get a benefit, you don't get half of hers.
Okay. So bottom line is she has to draw at 62 then, right?
Well, she can wait until whenever. If you wanted a spousal benefit, she'd have to draw at 62 or 63.
Okay.
And for her to draw her own benefit, she's got to be making less than roughly $16,000.
Yeah, because there is the earnings test that if she's working, then her Social Security would be, they'd have to stop. They would suspend it.
They took away a lot of our fun.
Right. And you said there's further information on this on your website?
Yeah, I mean, John knows where it is.
Yeah, I tell you what, if you want to hold on, we actually put it up on our Facebook page.
Oh, Facebook.
So I don't know if you're on Facebook. If you're not, you can go to our website at wealthed.com, and there's a little link you can click. So, Tom, hold on, and I'll have somebody tell you off the air. If you have any other questions?
No, sir, that's it. I appreciate it.
Okay, you bet. Hold on, and we can get this to you. It's just a downloadable guide. Yeah, it's again.
I love all the emails that are going out. If you don't do something right now, you're going to lose your options. No, it's all about when you were born. And for the spousal retirement benefit, you had to have been 62 before the end of last year. And if you were, you don't have to do anything right now unless you're already full retirement age. Because you still have an option that those of us who were born after 1953 don't have. But there's nothing you can do right now unless you can somehow age yourself very quickly to that full retirement age benefit.
Well, the deadline exists for people who are already full retirement age or will be before.
That's the file and suspend option.
No, I'm saying that. When they talk about a deadline and say you have to do something now, this is what they're referring to. It's a small-ish subset of people, but there is a clock ticking for people who are full retirement age or just about to be full retirement age before April.
So if you are full retirement age, or you will be full retirement age in the next 2 months, then you want to very closely look at what your options are, because you've only got until April 29th to file and suspend your benefit and allow somebody else to take a benefit from your work record.
Correct. Yes. So,
but anybody who's not full retirement age by the end of April, it's not going to matter.
Right.
Nothing you do right now next month is going to matter.
Unless you can somehow accelerate your age, which I don't know that anybody's ever been able to do that.
Or yet. Really wants to.
Probably not. But Tom was talking about was the restricted application. That's something else that is available for people for the next three plus years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, 877-PLANNER. Questions on this? We're here to help you out. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. I love this song.
It's fun.
This came out in college, you know? It goes like 8 minutes or something, doesn't it? Yeah. Rock Lobster. Down, down, down. All right, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here answering your money questions on the program, 877-752-6637. We'll get to some more of your emails coming up. We'll also get to a couple more of the ways you can take the money out of your IRA, because we had questions on those. Without penalty, we've already covered a couple of them, the death of the owner or 72T. We talked about that, life annuities, and there are a few other ways to do it. So we'll talk about that in just a couple of moments. But if you have money questions, you can call us, 877-PLANNER. You can also get in touch with us via email at wealthed.com or come visit the Brain Trust at any one of the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies workshops. We have more coming up. And I would suggest that you go to wealthed.com to find out exactly where. At the live events tab, you click on that, and you'll see the various city interest has yet to visit for this particular calendar sequence. So if you go whichever one you want to visit, and it's all free, just tell us you're going to show up, and we'll put out a chair for you and welcome you with open arms. Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors are putting Retirement Income Strategies workshops, as we've been doing for many, many years here. And we would love to see you at any one of them, or all of them, if you want to follow the Brain Trust around. I've been trying to get people to do that, you know, heads or whatever. Follow the Brain Trust around to the various cities.
Bucket heads.
We had a couple of different ideas, but, you know, that's.
That didn't work.
No, it didn't. We tried it, and it just didn't work. Anyway, go to wealthed.com. Again, our phone number, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Okay, so. Going to finish this up for the people who had asked after the program yesterday, a couple of folks, avoiding the penalty on IRAs. Obviously, if you got money in an IRA, there are ways to get, you want to get money out of it. There are ways to do it. Besides dying, we don't recommend that, but eventually it happened to somebody. The 72T election, we mentioned that last, and qualified higher education expenses. The first-time home purchase,
yep,
we had a call on this too yesterday. Let's explain what a first-time home buyer really is.
Well, somebody who has not owned the property that they're living in as their primary residence for at least the last 2 years.
So if you've been living in a place as a renter or whatever it is, and...
Doesn't mean that you don't own other property. Doesn't mean that you haven't owned a property you lived in previous years. It just means that you do not own the house that you are currently using as your primary residence and have not owned the house that you're using as your primary residence for at least 2 years.
Okay.
If you haven't, now you're eligible as a first-time home buyer to take up to $10,000 out of a traditional IRA or up to $10,000 of earnings from a Roth IRA.
Yeah. Now, this $10,000 is, I guess, a lifetime
limit. It's a lifetime limit.
Is that right?
Right. I mean, even though I could potentially be eligible for a first-time home buyer more than once in my lifetime, I can only take out up to $10,000 or any combination of that amount over my lifetime. So if I took out $4,000, today, bought a house, lived in it for a couple of years, sold it, rented for a couple of years, decided to buy another house, I don't have $10,000 left remaining on my, lifetime distribution. I used four already, so I only have six to take from my account now, because $10,000 is a lifetime limit.
So when you talk about putting it toward a first-time home purchase, this is obviously a down payment.
Yeah.
You can't put it toward landscaping or anything like that. This has to be, I'm guessing, going toward...
Now you're
going to
make me get the actual wording of it.
Well, somebody asked me that one time a long time ago, and I said, as far as I know, when they say it goes toward a first-time home purchase, that this is exactly what it is. It goes toward the purchase of the home.
Let's see. Let's.
Well,
okay. Cost of buying, building, or rebuilding a home. Or reasonable settlement, financing, or other closing cost.
Okay, closing costs, and that goes toward the loan, obviously. But I mean, first time home purchase, 10 grand. I don't know too many places where you can find a house for 10 grand.
Well, but you can double up with a spouse and get 20.
Well, that's true. So it's per person.
And whether or not that's the entire down payment, or it's just helping you with the down payment.
Yes, that's what they mean by going toward a first-time home purchase.
You got a husband and wife, if they can each take 10 out, there's $20,000. You know, that could be 5, 10% on a lot of places. And in many cases, that's what you need.
Right.
Just get your foot in the door.
Okay, so there's your first-time home purchase. Another way you can get money out of your IRA. Now, I'm assuming you have to just prove to the IRS that this is what you did.
Well, if they ever audit you. The idea would be to try to tell your IRA custodian what you're doing so they tell there's an exception. But otherwise, you file a 5329 form and you tell them it's a first-time home purchase. And as long as if they ever ask, you can show your closing statement that shows at least the $10,000 in down payment, closing, financing costs, and all that. And it happened within 120 days of you taking the money out of the IRA.
Now, here's another one, too. Unreimbursed medical expenses. This is where we get into this floor or ceiling or whatever you want to call it of expenses that you've already paid out of your pocket,
right?
Which is 10% of AGI if you're under the age of 65.
Right. So if you're born in 1951 or before 1951, you've got this 7.5% floor. But if you're born after that, you've got a 10% floor that you have to exceed before you can take money out of an IRA before 59.5, penalty-free. But it's assuming you have a lot of medical expenses. And in many cases, when you have a lot of medical expenses, you may not be working as much, so you may not have as high of an income as you may have otherwise. You can use an IRA distribution to potentially pay for some of it. Now, the idea also there is that it's 10%, you're being able to take it out, but that also becomes a deduction. And so hopefully it'll wash out the tax. If you have enough itemized deductions, obviously that would be a nice thing to do. But yeah, you've got to deal with these thresholds. That one's a tough one because it's kind of a moving target because your AGI does include your IRA distribution.
Yeah. So if you took $3,000 out of your IRA, let's say maybe it's for RMD purposes or whatever, that actually adds to your AGI.
Right.
So now you're trying to catch up to what the AGI is.
So if your AGI is $100,000 and you have $30,000 in expenses, so you say, okay, 10% of my AGI is $10,000. The other three I should be able to take out of my IRA. Take three out of the IRA, but now you got 103, so a portion of that three will be penalized.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that fun?
It's just, it's kind of an odd way to do things, but it's true, they will allow you to do that. Now, what about something, this has come up too, not very often. If you're unemployed, there are ways you can actually access that money in the IRA without having a penalty.
Specifically, you can use it to help pay for your medical insurance premiums. If you're unemployed, have received the full 12 weeks of unemployment insurance, and now are not receiving that, but need help paying for your medical expenses, your medical insurance, you can take some money out of the IRA. This one's a little bit more specific. The requirements are you lost your job, you received unemployment compensation for the 12 consecutive weeks because of the lost job. You receive the distribution during either the year you receive the unemployment compensation or following year.
Wait, you receive the
from the IRA.
From the IRA.
So if you were unemployed the last 12 weeks of the year, and then you took it out the following year, that doesn't work. So they got to go across 2 years.
Okay.
And you receive distributions for no longer than 60 days after you get reemployed. So you can continue to take it out for as long as you're unemployed, but once you get reemployed, you've only got 2 months more that you can take out for your medical insurance.
Yeah, okay, so these are medical insurance premiums that we're
talking
about.
Medical insurance premiums.
Yeah, I guess they're being nice in this particular regard.
But that's a pretty tight one. But, I mean, it may help some people, yes.
Well, it might, because if you've ever been unemployed and you don't have health insurance, I mean, and you're...
Well, they're going to penalize you if you don't have health insurance.
Right, so if you owe, or if you're going to try to go on some kind of COBRA plan or whatever it is...
Price of COBRA plans?
These things can be really expensive. And for some people, all they've got, if they don't have a paycheck coming in, is the money in their IRAs.
Yeah, and so, or the 401k, roll it to an IRA, now you have access to it.
Exactly. So that's one. And finally, disability. You can take money out of your IRA without penalty in the event of disability. Explain that very quickly.
Well, especially if you can qualify for Social Security disability, then there are no more premature distribution penalties. It's just they're giving you access to whatever the accounts are, your personal annuities, the earnings in those, your IRAs, so Death, disability, 59 and a half are the main ones. But disability is one where, unfortunately, if you become disabled, have access to the IRA money, still, but no penalty. Now, the real issue is, defines disability. And obviously, if you're on Social Security disability, they're not going to question it. But what if you don't qualify for Social Security disability? Are there other disability definitions that may make you eligible for a benefit? And that's where you're going to have to convince the IRS that you're disabled.
Yeah, when you say when you're on already on Social Security disability, you've already met the disability requirements. Somebody who's disabled, the requirements by the government, right?
Right. Now, according to the IRS, you're considered disabled if you can furnish proof that you cannot do any substantial gainful activity because of your physical or mental condition. And a physician has to get involved here.
Okay, so if you have that, but again, I don't know if it's going to be able to code this properly. If you can go to them and say, look, I'm disabled, so I don't need to file the paperwork with the IRS. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But at least it's one way that you may be able to get money out of your IRA without penalty.
And if they don't, then you just file the form that says, I'm disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from me, IRS.
Oh, by the way, these are all taxable.
Oh, yeah. This doesn't change the taxation.
Exactly. That's something that the question we get as well. Okay, more coming up. Your phone calls, emails, trivia, etc. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. For you every day on the program, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It's Bucket Strategy Investing, talking to you about whatever money issues you have, whatever's on your mind. Coming up tomorrow on this program, probably right away in the first hour, we're going to be talking about another strategy that is not, for whatever reason, ignored, I think, by many, if not most, advisors. And I don't know why, because it's an extremely important part of your financial plan, and that has to do with asset location. Where do you put certain assets? You have, capital assets that are taxed in a certain way. And a lot of this, by the way, is tied up in taxes.
And I mean, we can talk about why. I mean, I'll save it tomorrow. Why I think that this is overlooked as much as it is.
Yeah, make note of that, because when we first started talking about it years and years ago, it never occurred to me that.
Well, that may be one of the problems right there.
Well, it may be that where your assets are located actually can make a big difference as far as taxes. I mean, there are all kinds of things to consider. But I look around and I see asset allocation a lot.
Which is important.
Sure, it's part of it. But where the assets are actually located, and maybe part of the problem is because it requires thinking. It requires something besides a computer. A key on a computer and having something spit back out at you, which is why we plan on this program, and that's why we talk about what we talk about. So that's coming up tomorrow on this program, asset location, not just allocation, but asset location. Okay, 877-PLANNER, before we get to the emails and phone calls, we've got our trivia for today. This coming out of the Government Accountability Office, GAO, an estimated 9,300 Americans will turn 65 years old each day this year, 2016. This group represents the sixth year of 19 years of baby boomers turning 65. An estimated, 11,400 Americans are going to turn 65 years old each day. That's by the year 2029.
The end of the baby booms.
So the number of people turning 65. This just started in... 2011. Was it that long ago? I remember us talking about the first baby boomers.
This is the sixth year.
Turning 65.
I'm just going by what they said.
No, it is. It's just that was 2011. 46, yes. Which would make 2011. Yeah. I don't know where the time has gone. So there's a whole bunch. Last of them will be going through, what did we figure?
2029.
Yeah?
2029.
Well, I want to make sure that they're using the 1946 through 1964. Okay, yeah. So anybody born in 65 is not considered a baby boomer.
So ha-ha.
Well, I have no idea. All right, well, there's your trivia for today. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Robin in Madera, California. If you want to email us, it's wealthed.com, our website. Robin, Madera, California. My wife's Social Security benefit at 62 would be approximately $740 per month, and I would be 64 and could apply for a spousal benefit of approximately $500 per month and let my Social Security benefit accrue to $3,350 at age 70. Now, when I apply for my benefit age set at 70, can my wife apply for a spousal benefit from my record, which would be about $1,300 a month?
Well, first off, you can't do it yet. You're saying that at 64 you could apply for a spousal benefit without applying for your own first. You cannot do that. You never could. This has nothing to do with the new rules. To be able to choose, you have to be 66. You've got to be your full retirement age for you. That's age 66. So if you want to wait for a couple of years, your wife can turn hers on now or turn it on before you turn 66. And at that point, you could start receiving roughly $500 a month from age 66 to age 70. Then at age 70, when you turn your benefit on, now your wife could potentially be eligible for a benefit. Now, it's not going to be the full 50% of your full retirement age benefit. My guess is, by the way, you're doing this, you're saying that your full retirement age benefit is $2,600 a month. So 50% of that is $1,300. That is true, but it's not what she's going to get. She will get that number less the discount she took in her own, because reality is she's going to continue to receive her own benefit. She's going to continue to receive her $740, but that is not what they're going to put into the calculation to determine how much the spousal retirement benefit is. They're going to put her benefit, or what her benefit would have been at the time that she becomes eligible for the spousal benefit. The time she becomes eligible for the spousal benefit, she'll be 66. And the time she becomes eligible for the spousal benefit, she will receive the difference between her benefit at that time and the spousal benefit at that time. The difference is she would have received $1,000 a month. The spousal is $1,300 a month. So the spousal benefit in this case will be $300 a month, added to what she's already receiving her own benefit, added to the $750. So she won't get $1,300, she'll get $1,050,
yeah,
give or take.
Well, and what you mean is because she would be taking it at age 62, hers.
She's taking a discount on hers.
So that discount applies all the way through.
It's going to stay. It stays.
It doesn't go away.
Well, while they're both alive and while there's a spousal benefit payable, that discount is still applied.
Now, you said he could do it at age, not at age 64, but he could do it at age 66.
He can.
This is dependent, though, on whether he's already 62, right?
He said he's 64.
Well, he said, I would be 64 when his wife is 62.
Well, then, Robin, if you are not at least 62 at this moment and haven't been 62 for several months, you don't even have that option. So to have that option to take just the spousal retirement benefit, you had to have been 62 before the end of 2015. If you were not 62 by the end of 2015, you no longer have the option to do a spousal benefit. So let's say that you are currently 61 years old, and you're thinking that in a couple of years you would like to apply this, this strategy when you turn 66. Unfortunately, you're too young. Even when you get to 66, 67, full retirement age, if you were not born in 1953 or earlier, you do not have the option to choose. When you apply, you must apply for your own first, and then if the spousal is larger, you can have the spousal, but in your case, that won't happen. Yours is much larger.
Exactly, and if you're wondering what we're talking about or these new rules, I should just remind you, too, that Professor Plum has helped put together, along with some other folks, the big changes coming to Social Security. That's what it's called. It's a downloadable sheet. It's about, well, I don't know, 7-8 pages, something like that. It's an easy read, and it's a way to help you understand what these changes that happened last year and are now taking effect, how they may affect you. So you can go to our wealthed.com. Our website, there's a little link at the top and at the bottom, by the way, at the top corner that says that there's the Facebook. You click on that, it'll take you right to our Facebook page where you can download it. Easy to do. If you need help with that, you can just give us a call here. We're out of time. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, Professor Plum or any of the advisors from Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust advisors, you can talk to them at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.